Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Odd Trails is a true paranormal podcast. If you have a story to share, send it to stories@oddtrails.com. Enjoy the show.
Forget facts. Forget logic. Forget everything that seems real. Just trust. Believe.
Something Followed My Dad in the Woods by Brittany. The story I'm about to tell you happened to my dad when he was around 12 years old, and then again to both my dad and uncle when they were in their late teens. My dad used to tell me this story when I was a kid, so some of the details are a little bit blurry. This took place in a small, one-stoplight town in North Carolina. My dad was raised with a country lifestyle. They grew their own food and hunted or trapped for their meat. One night, my dad decided to go hunting. Usually he would go with an adult or one of his siblings, but this night he chose to go alone, taking only his hound dog, Flossie. The hunting area was directly in front of their house. Imagine a big open pasture that led out to a creek, which then opened into a wooded area. It was a warm summer night, and everything seemed normal. He made it to the creek, where he usually encountered wildlife, and stood by the water, waiting. That's when Flossie started growling. The hair on her back stood straight up as she stared across the creek into the woods. My dad figured it was just an animal, maybe a raccoon or possum. So he called Flossie over, patted her head, and reassured her before continuing on. But Flossie remained on edge. They crossed the creek into the woods, and Flossie suddenly took off, barking and growling, still with her hair raised. She was chasing something. My dad felt uneasy but tried to brush it off. He followed the sound of her barking deeper into the woods until he found her crouched low, like a cat about to pounce, but whimpering. Her hair still stood on end. He shined his flashlight in the direction she was focused on. Nothing. He scanned the trees. Still nothing. The unease grew stronger. The warm air around him had gone cold, and he could feel the hair on the back of his neck stand up. He had the distinct feeling that something was watching him. Flossie had sensed it from the beginning. Deciding he'd had enough, he called Flossie and started heading home. It was about a 2-mile walk back, and he used his flashlight constantly now. Flossie trotted beside him, tail tucked between her legs. As they walked, he tried to distract himself with happy thoughts, but then he heard it, leaves crunching behind him. He stood around, flashlight scanning the woods. Nothing. He kept walking, but the sound continued. Every time he stopped, the steps stopped too. He called out, thinking maybe one of his brothers was playing a prank, but then remembered his older brother was working a night shift, and his younger brother wouldn't have ventured off alone. To test the presence, he tried walking a few steps, then stopping suddenly to catch whatever it was off guard. But still no luck. He was getting more scared and irritated, especially as the air remained cold and the woods eerily silent. No crickets, no frogs, no wind. A stark contrast to the lively sounds on his way in. When he finally reached the creek, relief washed over him, but the sounds continued. As he crossed the creek, he heard splashes behind him, as if someone or something was walking through the water too. He didn't dare look back. Crossing the pasture, he made it to the barbed wire fence that marked the edge of their property. He pressed the wire down and climbed over. Just as he landed on the other side, he turned around and saw the barbed wire being pushed down again, as if something unseen was climbing over after him. That was enough. He and Flossie sprinted the rest of the way home. He slammed the front door shut, locked it, and ran into his room with Flossie, locking that door too. He spent the night underneath the covers, jumping at every noise. He never told anyone about the experience. Being raised in a very religious household, he didn't think anyone would believe him. That is until years later, when something similar happened again, but this time there was a witness, his younger brother. My dad was in his early 20s and my uncle was in his late teens. It was mid-fall, the leaves had mostly fallen, and there was a cool, crisp wind. Bored, they decided to take their dogs out hunting. By then, my dad had tucked the memory of that strange night away, though he hadn't forgotten it. They headed to the same spot, across the pasture, over the creek, and into the woods. At first, everything was normal. They saw raccoons, possums, and even a few mice scurrying around. But as they ventured deeper, they noticed something strange. The animals disappeared, and the wind stopped. Everything was eerily still. The air grew colder, like when you swim into a cold spot in a lake. Though it was fall, this chill felt unnatural. My uncle noticed it too and turned to say something, but when he looked at my dad, he saw his face had gone pale. My dad tried to shake off the unease and pressed on, hoping that if he ignored it, whatever it was would go away. But the woods remained dead silent. Even their dogs had run off. They found a tree to lean against and sat down, trying to relax. Minutes later, they heard footsteps. Deliberate, crunching through the leaves, heading toward them. My dad shined his flashlight, but saw nothing. The footsteps sounded like they belonged to something walking on two legs. They both jumped up, terrified but trying not to show it. As they started walking home, the footsteps followed. My uncle kept asking questions. What the hell is that? My dad, trying to stay calm, said, probably a coyote. But my uncle wasn't buying it. Coyotes don't walk like that, and we would have seen it. Finally, my dad sighed and admitted, this isn't the first time. Years ago, the same thing happened to me. He told my uncle about the night Flossie had followed him, how the invisible footsteps had mirrored his own, and how the barbed wire fence had been pressed down by something unseen. As they crossed the creek, the splashing sounds returned. Something was still following them. When they reached the fence, my dad climbed over first. Then my uncle, shining his flashlight back, saw the wire being pressed down again, just like my dad had described. They sprinted home, finding their dog sleeping under the big oak tree as if nothing had happened. Inside, they sat silently, trying to process it. My uncle finally broke the silence. "Why didn't you tell me this happened before?" "I didn't think anyone would believe me," my dad replied. "And I didn't want to scare Mom." "Well, I believe you now," my uncle said. "But let's keep this between us. I don't want to end up in a mental hospital." Years later, when I was a kid, my dad told me this story as a ghost tale before bed. It wasn't until I was a teenager that he admitted it was all true. I grew up playing in those same woods. I never had an experience like theirs, but I often felt uneasy, like I was being watched. There's a nearby family cemetery with graves dating back to the 1800s, some marked with just rocks. There are even unmarked graves in the woods, their sunken spots visible in the ground. We've also found arrowheads and other old artifacts around the property. This land has been in our family for generations, but who was here before us? I still wonder if the spirit that followed my dad and uncle came from the old family cemetery, or even further back, tied to the land itself. There are so many questions I'd like answered about my family, the land, and whatever it was that walked those woods all those years ago.
Still Confused by Time, Place, 5719. On my daughter's birthday, I had to run an errand to pick up some balloon inflators that a friend had kindly offered us. My friend and I had talked about it in the morning, but we didn't agree on a time. She also never gave me the friend's address, so I completely forgot about it. Later that day, I wanted to get some pots for planting to have my plants ready for the party. I searched Facebook Marketplace and found someone giving away 10 nice pots. We agreed on a price, and I went to pick them up. I had the seller's address on my phone and entered the house number into my car's navigation. For some reason, I was convinced the house number was 22. I knocked on the door, and to my surprise, my friend opened it. She looked confused since we hadn't arranged a time for me to pick up the balloon inflator, and I was equally confused as to why she was answering the door. She was in the middle of a video call and told me to wait a minute. Still puzzled, I quickly asked, "Are you living with Lucy?" Lucy being the person that was selling the pots. She frowned and said, "Lucy? No. Wait a minute." I went back to my car to check my phone and realized the actual address was the number 26, not 22. My friend then came out with the balloon inflator and said, "I didn't know you were coming to pick this up. Hope it's useful. Say hi to your wife and enjoy the party." I again asked, "Do you know Lucy?" She laughed and said, "Oh, Lucy's my neighbor." At that point, I had to explain, "Look, I actually came to pick up some plant pots, not the inflator. I wasn't planning on getting it today. I didn't even know your address." She looked confused. I was confused. I then knocked on Lucy's door, explained everything, and honestly, nobody really understood what had just happened. This city is huge, with at least 100,000 houses. Google Maps had no idea about the party, the pots, or the balloons, and to be honest, I'm still confused.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Stories of the Dark by Anonymous. I have a few short stories to share, but first, some background. I was quite young during these events, and they jumped from house to house. These are old memories, mostly from before I even knew the references I'll mention existed. In the first story, I was around 4 years old. I was in bed, lying on my right side on the bottom bunk of a bed I shared with my step-sibling, who was about 10 years older than me. They weren't there that night. They were with their other guardian. The room was small, and I remember it being late, maybe around 9 or 10 p.m. There was a floor lamp nightlight with red, blue, and green lights. One of those giant ones meant to help me fall asleep. Some of the details are foggy, but I remember this part clearly. I was terrified. In my front window, inside my room, stood an all-black creature. It almost looked like the alien from the game Alien, but with a long, thin extension from the back of its head, almost like if you draped a blanket over a broom handle. But this one was sharp at the end, and curved slightly downward. This thing was darker than dark, absorbing the light from the nightlight instead of reflecting it. Now I know what you're probably thinking. You were a little kid, it was probably your imagination. But no, I know it was real. I was frozen in fear. And of course I had to go pee. So I made the obvious choice every sane child makes. I decided facing whatever the hell that thing was better than dealing with my mom's wrath for wetting the bed. I scrambled down the ladder of the bunk bed, and the moment my feet hit the floor, the creature vanished, just gone into thin air. I rushed to the bathroom, did my business, and ran back to bed, climbing the ladder as fast as I could. You can imagine how 4-year-old me couldn't stop talking about it at school the next day. The next story happened when I was about 6 or 7, this time at my dad's house. I split my time between my parents, weekdays with my mom and weekends with my dad. He was a bit more laid back, especially about bedtime. I'd stay up late playing on my tablet. One night, I was up pretty late. I don't remember the time exactly. When I glanced up from my screen toward my bedroom door, which was slightly cracked so I could run to my dad if I got scared. That's when I saw him. A tall shadow figure stood in the doorway watching me. He wasn't just a dark silhouette. He had definition. He wore an old-style hat, kind of like a cowboy hat, but not quite. He didn't have a top hat or anything cliche, just a shadow man standing there. The house had little nightlights in the outlets, so the hallway was dimly lit. I could see him clear enough to know what I was looking at. We locked eyes, or at least I stared at where I thought his eyes would be. For maybe a full minute or two, we just stared at each other. I wasn't frozen with fear, but I wasn't moving either. I felt defensive, almost like I was silently daring him to do something. Then, slowly, he backed away, disappearing into the living room. I never saw him again.
I think I switched to another universe by this throwaway for today. This happened when I was 8 after a complicated major surgery. I woke up a different person with a different family. Everything was identical except for their personalities, the things that they knew, and my own too. Now, in the last few months before the new year, I was in a major brain fog, like I was truly gone and purely on autopilot. I remember what was going on around then, so I didn't forget. I just truly wasn't me. It was like someone else was pretending to be me. I was driving home on the freeway and I heard this awful noise. I looked up into my rearview mirror and I saw a black sports car barreling toward me. It was maybe 2 seconds that I saw the car and barely processed that it was going to hit me. It changed lanes and just barely missed me, shaking my entire car. I finally breathed and had my, oh crap, I almost died moment, and then carried on with my day. The brain fog remained almost heavier in the next few days leading into the new year. Then on the second day of the new year, I literally snapped back into myself. I didn't feel it happen, but I woke up feeling it, if that makes sense. All of a sudden, I can think more clearly than I have been able to in the last 20 years. I'm more energetic. I'm more clear-minded and more motivated to take care of myself. I feel lighter and happier. I feel like me. Like that missing girl from 20 years ago finally came back. I've never felt more connected to my body before in my life. My body never felt like mine after that surgery. Now, it feels like mine. It even feels physically different than the one I have been living in. Like the skin is different, less elastic, and more aged. But when I look in the mirror, I'm staring at myself, and I recognize myself. For many years, I struggled to recognize myself. In pictures, videos, I didn't even feel a connection. But now I do. I keep staring at myself and I recognize all of it. My reflection frightened me a lot over the last few years, like it was someone else or something else staring back at me. Not so scary that I couldn't look at myself, but just unsettling. Like they weren't my eyes I was looking into, but the eyes of someone that was angry at me. It's not like that anymore. Now it feels normal and safe. I've been looking at old photos of myself, and it looks like someone else to me. Like I said, it's unsettling, but also validating. Absolutely nothing has changed in my life. No diet changes, no medication changes, no job changes, no new people, no changes in exercise, nothing. Not even new bedding or decor. And since I've been quote-unquote back for the last 2 weeks, I just kept thinking, hey, my mental health is recovering. I'm on the up. All my years of hard work just decided to magically pay off. But I knew something wasn't right about it. Then, last night, I was grocery shopping with my husband in the same store that we always go to. I was standing off at the end of an aisle, waiting for him to come back from grabbing something, and then the whole environment stopped for a moment. The sounds were still going, but it felt like someone was just playing regular grocery store sounds on a loop. It was like the same audio track every time. That's exactly what it sounded like to me. The lights got brighter, the textures around me got clearer, and I just stared straight forward at the drink display. I felt like I was in some kind of rendering process. That's the only way I can describe it, since I work in that field. It just felt like I was caught in a loading loop, but I remained conscious. I was able to look at my husband as he walked up toward me, and he looked so out of place, like he was pasted into the scenery and slowly blended in. When he made it up to me, everything snapped back into place. The same feeling it did on January 2nd, and things just went back to normal. It all happened in about 40 seconds or so, but it felt like 3 to 4 minutes of me just standing there conscious while my body froze as it was rendering. I still feel like me. Nothing about that part has changed. But after that happened, I noticed that my husband has been a little different. He was in the car with me when we almost got hit, too. He's still himself, still recognizable, but certain mannerisms are different. The way that he spends his time has changed. His sleep pattern has changed. Nothing drastic, but just enough that a wife would definitely notice. You know what I mean? I wonder if we both died in that car accident, and that allowed the original me to come back and maybe a different version of my husband. He actually barely even remembers the car thing, and barely reacted when it happened, which is very unlike him. He can have some serious road rage. Now I want to jump back to add this in. My childhood memories, especially from 8 and beyond, they feel a lot more distant than they ever have. This could be because of age, but I do feel more disconnected from the experiences of those memories. Except for years 10, 12, and 16, those are the most vivid and connected memories that I have. Everything else just feels like a film that somebody else captured. Even though I've had more mental and physical energy than I've had in decades, I do feel tired, like I'm recovering from a long journey. Like when you touch down in a new faraway place and run around and see everything. And then the second you get back to the hotel, you pass out from pure exhaustion. Anyway, just strange things have happened on a micro level. And I like to think about different theories. What do you all think? Any similar experiences?
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Experience from a Skeptic by Nico from California. This might seem like a small, unimportant story, but it certainly made an impact on me earlier today. I'd lost my regular reader pair of glasses last night and was frantically looking all over my house for them before work today. I have two pairs, a nicer, more expensive pair, and a flexible, nylon-framed pair that I consider my house glasses. I fall asleep in them and don't worry about damaging them. These are the ones that mysteriously went missing after I woke up. I pulled the covers off my bed, lifted my mattress up, thinking they might have fallen under the bed while I was asleep. No luck. I started retracing my steps and looking into other rooms, thinking that maybe there was some chance I took them off and left them somewhere else while I was half asleep. I had resigned to accepting that I'd simply lost them and would never find them again, going as far as to start preparing to order a replacement pair. Well, today as I got dressed and ready to leave for work, I looked down to see, you guessed it, the pair of glasses. They were just sitting on my bathroom floor, folded closed with the lenses facing up. There's no way I would have gotten into the shower and not noticed them there beforehand. It was shocking and even amusing. I've had an on and off relationship with the paranormal throughout my life. I've gone through periods of believing and not believing, and have finally settled on a healthy, skeptical approach in recent years. But this is one event I simply can't explain. I laughed it off and verbally thanked whoever was responsible for giving them back.
A whole disease has gone missing by mysterious Ganesh 384. In 2012, my husband was diagnosed with celiac disease. He was having an endoscopy and a biopsy. For those that don't know, celiac disease is an autoimmune disease that eats away at part of your intestines if you ingest wheat, and to treat it, you have to be on a strict gluten-free diet. It's hereditary, so you can't get it without the gene. He had to change his entire lifestyle to ensure all our foods were certified gluten-free. At that time, we were separated but sharing custody of our daughter. And at that time, my daughter was also showing symptoms, and based on his diagnosis, we put her on a gluten-free diet as well. This put a psychological toll on her, as she often had to be left out of having treats at school and cake at parties, and I had to make and bring all her food everywhere. She was formally diagnosed a few years ago by endoscopy and biopsy after a gluten-free trial as well. Fast forward a few years, and my husband began having a nutrient deficiency. I told him to visit his GI because if he was eating any hidden gluten, it could have started frying his intestines' ability to absorb nutrients. Well, here's where it gets interesting. The doctor found no record of his initial celiac diagnosis, which was done by his former doctor who had passed away. So, The doctor's office had him repeat the gluten trial and endoscopy all over again, which his results came back, and they were negative for celiac. Upon receiving these results, I argued that there must have been some kind of mix-up. I figured they had to have missed it in the biopsy because how is that possible? Plus, how the hell does our daughter have celiac disease if he doesn't? So he then drove around to all his former doctor's offices, which all turned out to be closed. It took him a while, but he finally found out how to retrieve a copy of his medical records from the deceased doctor's archives. And guess what? The original test was negative for celiac. Before his initial diagnosis, he didn't even know what celiac disease was. When he was diagnosed, he had to do massive amounts of research about it and change his whole lifestyle to be gluten-free. I mean, our daughter has it. I'm baffled, and I feel so bad for my poor daughter, who always feels like an outcast due to having celiac disease. She's always been one who's left out when it comes to sharing food with people outside our gluten-free home. There had to have been some kind of glitch in the universe that changed the results of the original test. It was definitely positive before. I'm not sure what I should do with my daughter. Maybe retest her and see if her celiac has disappeared as well. I can't believe this whole disease just disappeared. It's insane.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
So we've covered stories of people feeling like they aren't in their correct reality before, but I really like this one. She goes into surgery at 8 years old, wakes up feeling like she's in a completely different family, and then 20 years later, she feels like she's finally returned to her, I guess, normal body.
Yeah. And the way that she describes it, you know, feeling disconnected from herself, like she was watching somebody else's life play out. I think that the first conclusion most of us will come to is it could be a disassociation disorder. But you know me, I'm a believer. And so my thinking is, what if she really did swap timelines in that moment of surgery? You know, what if it's some kind of quantum immortality thing?
it would be one thing if it was just one switch, but there's this second event where they almost got hit by a car and suddenly she feels like her original self again, like she's been asleep for, what was it, like 20 years?
Yeah.
It does kind of point to some sort of consciousness shift, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds crazy, but the mini worlds theory actually supports that idea.
Mm.
Like every decision, or in this case, a near-death event, splits into like multiple possible outcomes. And if that's true, then maybe when she quote unquote died in that, you know, in that car accident, she merged back into a version of reality where her original self was waiting to take over again.
It kind of makes me think of chess and how like there's a theoretical unlimited amount of chess games that can be played out, but there's still rules that you have to follow. It kind of, yeah, maybe life is similar. You know, we can always make different moves on the chessboard. It can always play out a little bit differently, but we never quite know, you know, and every game ends a little bit differently. Maybe that's reincarnation, you know, a different chess game that gets played out.
Yeah.
Or just some like Twin Peaks Black Lodge waiting room.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. There's just so much more to the story than the typical disassociation explanation, I think. Some like nightmare ketamine treatment, maybe.
Yeah, that really sounds like some dark Sesame Street segment. Disassociation explanation.
Condensation, precipitation, master of my own domain. Anyway, yeah, or like Wonder Chosen, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Man, that show was weird. I love it.
Yeah, it's a good one. But yeah, what I was getting at is that she had other events like the rendering moment at the grocery store.
Yeah.
She literally describes reality as feeling like it was loading in, like she got stuck in a buffering loop, maybe some like 56K type of thing, dial-up internet.
Yeah.
It just sounds so much like a nod to some kind of simulation breaking down.
And we've had so many stories on the show like that. We don't even need to cover them all. I was just reading about the dead air effect this week, after kind of falling into a rabbit hole of glitch stories. And it's basically where people will hear the same background noises repeating, just like the author did. Like, the world is on some kind of audio loop.
Man, I used to think, like, I was the only person who knew what mourning doves were, because I just stopped hearing them, like, once I became an adult, and I swear it felt that way. But I guess they're still around, but I haven't been hearing any mourning doves, and it kind of makes me sad.
I can't say I've ever heard a mourning dove.
You definitely have. You just don't know the name of it, maybe, if you heard the sound. It's the
that was very pretentious and insulting of you. You just don't know the name of it, maybe.
I guarantee him. You know what an eagle sounds like, because you know what an eagle is. You definitely heard a mourning dove.
All right, I'll take your word for it.
But I suppose it's kind of the same thing, just noises repeating, and then her husband looked like he was pasted in, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. That was pretty scary. It's like she wasn't hallucinating. She wasn't on drugs. She wasn't in some kind of dream state and nothing in her life had changed, but suddenly she sees the world as a glitch for almost a minute. It's like, if that happened to me, I'd lose my freaking mind.
Yeah, and the husband being a part of it all just kind of adds this layer of an idea that it's some kind of glitch or a shift and not some medical condition, which I don't know if that would be better or worse.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I mean, we're totally experts on this type of medical stuff.
Oh, of course, yeah. I have my bachelor's in something totally medical related.
Yeah.
I guess for legal reasons, we should preface by saying that that was sarcasm. We're not medical professionals. Don't take anything on this show as advice. Even if we say it's advice, we're joking. It's not advice. Like, don't take us seriously.
Yeah. This is a comedy podcast.
But the stories are purportedly true, as far as we know, so... At least there is that.
Yeah.
So anyway, the husband was in the car with her when they almost got hit. She thinks he might have shifted too, because since then, his mannerisms are different. His sleep schedule has changed. Even small habits have shifted. What if he didn't come back as the same version of himself?
That would mean that her real husband might be in a different timeline right now, like living his life with a version of her that's still running on autopilot.
And the husband she's with now is close enough that she knows it's him, but just slightly off.
Yeah, you can always tell when something's off with your partner.
Well, you're supposed to, but yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it's just a coincidence that her memories feel different either. She remembers like certain years really vividly, 10, 12, 16. But then the rest, it feels like she was watching a movie of someone else's life. Could those be like the only years where her original self was briefly in control before fading out again?
Yeah, like anchor points, I guess. What if when someone shifts between realities, there are these moments where their true self bleeds through before being pushed back, you know? And now she's finally regained control. I'm wondering why it took 20 years for her to return.
Yeah, that's weird. I guess either something forced her back or she was always meant to return, like, at that exact moment. And if that's the case, what's different about this version of reality that made it safe for her to come back?
The world may never know.
True.
Yeah. I like how Brittany's story, moving on, about her dad, were passed down directly to her from him. In her email, she mentioned having an 11-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
Who's listening to this episode, by the way. Hello, Brittany's daughter.
Cool. Hey, Brittany.
Brittany's not her name. It's the daughter.
Yeah. Well, it could be, right?
Yeah, Brittany Jr. Yeah, your name is now Brittany Jr. But yeah, if you ever have grandchildren, make sure you pass these stories on to them and encourage them to do the same.
Yeah, it's cool to keep the spirit alive with word of mouth storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I also like how by him telling Brittany his stories, it's like, sweet dreams, kiddo. Hope the invisible thing from the woods doesn't just follow you home.
Yeah, exactly. Your turn. I also love how he thought Flossie would protect him, but she was like, no, I'm scared too. You're on your own.
Yeah, Flossie had zero interest in being a hero. Tail tucked, probably thinking, you got us into this. You get us out.
Yeah. She did do good with the barking and I guess some chasing, but still, I can't blame her. Invisible stalker, cold spots, footsteps in sync, red flags galore.
Yeah.
And then the barbed wire being pushed down.
Yeah, twice. Once when he was a kid, and then again with his brother years later. It's like, whatever that thing was, it remembered.
Mm-hmm. That's what got me. The consistency, same path, same footsteps, even the same barbed wire being pushed down, like it was stuck in a loop or something. Here we are again.
Yeah, we're looping back. Or maybe it was tied to the land, like Brittany was saying. All those unmarked graves, arrowheads. Who knows what sort of energy is probably lingering out there.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if it was something residual or if it was actively following them, especially since it mirrored their movements.
Yeah, and the fact that it never showed itself, sometimes that's worse. The unknown is always scarier.
Naturally, yeah. It's like the monster you don't see is always more terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I respect that the uncle was like, let's keep this between us. I'm not trying to end up in a padded room.
Yeah. They just outran an invisible nightmare. No reason to ruin Thanksgiving dinner by bringing that up.
Yeah, it's like an implied blessing that doesn't need to be announced. You already mentioned it, but I still can't get over how her dad was just like, oh yeah, by the way, that actually happened. Traumatized her in the moment and blew her mind later.
Yeah, good parenting, I say. Builds character.
Oh yeah. I think with places like that, with so much history, it's bound to have some sort of spooky stuff going on out there. He just sort of confirmed it for her. That's doing a favor, I'd say.
Exactly. It's stories like this that make me feel a little apprehensive about wandering into the woods, at least at night. You know, I could do a trail during the day. That sounds fun.
Yeah, it's a relatively inexpensive hobby, too.
Yeah. What about it costs money?
Well, you got to get an REI credit card, of course, and max it out with all the coolest hiking accessories.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe some snacks for Flossie.
Yeah, Flossie was a good girl.
Amen. Love you, Floss.
Yeah, I love a good pet story. Anyways, thanks everybody so much for listening. Make sure you send your stories into stories@oddtrails.com and sign up for our Patreon to get ad-free versions of all of our episodes at patreon.com/oddtrails. Also, make sure to check out the new episodes of my other podcasts, Let's Not Meet, Cryptic Encounters, and the Old Time Radiocast at crypticcountypodcasts.com. Everybody stay safe.
Peace out.
the ghouls disturb you, darling.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.